She grew up in the fertile Valley of the Winds, surrounded by the songs, music, and spirit of her Scottish, French, and English ancestors. She sang at school, at church, at Sunday afternoon talent shows. She sang with her high school dance band, the Islanders, and with her friend as the duo, the Codroy Valley Sweethearts. She dreamed of being a star, like Dolly Parton, like Loretta Lynn. Then, a country music singer blew into the valley, and he gave her a chance to follow that dream. Today on Newfound Records, part one of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story.
Born in the Codroy Valley, huge music influences on both my mom's and my dad's side. My grandmother, Cormier, was a French singer, and actually at the age of 80, she sang at the Mariposa Folk Festival in Toronto, singing and with her spinning wheel and demonstrating the spinning skills as well, but singing French songs and singing English songs that she learned from her mother. And my grandmother, Cormier, and I were very close when we were kids, when I was a kid growing up. Actually, they live right next door to us, so I spent a lot of time with her learning her songs, and she was always singing. So she was a huge influence to me. And on my mother's side, my mom was a MacArthur, and her family, my gosh, there's so much music. My grandfather, Alan MacArthur, there's been a book written about him. He's in Scotland. He's a household name because of his traditions that he carried on to Newfoundland with him when his family moved here generations ago. And he was a piper. You could hear him on a Sunday afternoon in the Codroy Valley just resonating through the valley. He'd be walking up and down the road playing the pipes. And he was a Gaelic singer and a storyteller. He was just an amazing person. And his children were pipers and accordion players and singers as well. So there was a lot of influences from that side of the family as well. So
that's got it from both sides.
Really got it from both sides. Yeah, my love of singing, I think, came from my grandmother. But the other stuff, when I hear the bagpipes, something happens in my soul, you know. I know that you know, the roots are really deep.
The spirit's a calling, it's time to come home, back to the valley of the winds, where we grew up on music, family and love, and hearing our grandparents sing. I remember a time, not so long ago, when the old folks would gather to play. They'd pass on their knowledge through stories and songs, but it's not much like that these days. And we're having a ceilidh this Saturday night in the house where with the fiddle on his chest and Uncle Frankie stepping on the floor. The songs are no different and the tunes are still the same, just another generation here to play. And I know one thing's for certain, as the kitchen comes alive, this one's gonna see the light of day. And we're having a cake this Saturday night in the house where our grandparents, just like old times, there'll be homebrew and wine. We'll play the tunes that all the old folks sing. And we're having a ceilidh this Saturday.
When we were kids, and of course country music was played, the records were played in our house when we were kids. Loretta Lynn, Tanya Tucker, Dolly Parton, they were all my favorites when I was like preteen. And I sang a lot of their songs as well. But then on Sunday after Mass, what always played on the record player was Harry Hibbs and, you know, John White and all that stuff. And Johnny Horton, that was a big one as well. So we had different influences there as well. Yeah. And when I was, I'd say, oh gosh, some of my girlfriends and I, in our early teens or even preteen, sang on Sunday afternoon talent shows at either the Chicknick Lodge or the Starlight. They always had family talent shows there on Sunday afternoons. And I was saying earlier, like pre Minnie White days, because Minnie White was a big staple there at the Starlight Lounge for sure. But it was before that, and I think that too got me used to the stage a little bit as well. And from there, I joined a local band, the Islanders, when I was 16, and played the teenage dances and things like that. So it was just from one step to the next, you know, for the years.
So with those matinees, those at the Starlight and the Chicknick, what type of music were you singing then?
I remember singing songs from John Denver. And again, it was the country. It was the country influence at that age for me. John Denver, Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton, people like that.
Yes.
That's the cover songs
and,
that I sang at that time.
Did you play any musical instruments?
I played guitar. My brother-in-law taught me how to play the guitar when I was about 11 years old. Taught me a few chords, and from there I just, you know.
So you would accompany yourself while
you
sang?
Yeah.
I see. And tell me about this band, the Islanders. So, like, do you remember who else was in there and what type of music you played?
Oh, that was, again, it depended on the audience. We played a lot of, I can't tell you how many times I sang the Tiny Red Light over the years, because it depended on the audience. If we played to a group of older people, then it was like Newfoundland music. But people in the group, there was Roy Spencer, he was the lead singer, and myself, and Wallace Gale, who today is still a phenomenal an accordion player, and plays at the Silver Sands in the Cardiff Valley every Sunday afternoon. They still have a Sunday afternoon show, but now it's at another place in the valley. Mm-hmm. And Walter DeVoe, my God, he's the most amazing mandolin player you'll ever hear.
Yes.
And he plays, he lives in Corner Brook area, and he plays with a couple of different groups there in there as well, but he was part of the group back then as well. And the late Donald Brownrigg, who is the uncle of the Don Brownrigg today, recording and doing quite well for himself. He was a guitar player and a great guitar player. So we had some really good musicians at the time.
And they were from the local area?
And they were from the local area, yeah.
And the group was called the Islanders?
The Islanders, yeah. And over the years, members changed, of course. I mean, I moved on, and other people. Actually, my brother Gordon played with them for a while as well. After I was out on the road and he was getting into the business, he was a little younger than I am, so he joined the band and played for a while as well. So there were different people. Yeah. Also, when I was like in the ages around 13, 14, we had some different people in the valley, well, like my uncle Cyrus MacArthur, the accordion player, bagpiper, and we had a group of dancers called the Lancers, and my mom was a part of that at one point as well. There were different musicians. Joel Coyne and James McIsaac were fiddlers from the valley, the Cadre Valley Fiddlers, and groups of us would go, for example, one trip we made to the Killdevil Lodge in Lomond when I was about 12 years old and performed there. That was actually the first time I met Ron Hines. And he wasn't much more than a teenager himself, I think, at the time. So that was my first, and I remember, well, to this day, I remember my because we both sat there and sang songs for the audience together on stage. And I remember him saying to me, "You never stop singing, you keep singing." So that was something I always remembered over the years.
You're listening to a special edition of Newfound Records as we present part one of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story. And when we return, Loretta tells us how she met her longtime musical colleague and friend, Reg Watkins.
If the quality of the air we breathe depends to a large extent on the number of trees that surround us, wouldn't air quality improve if we simply planted more trees? The tree you plant and care for today will provide shade, beauty, clean air, and filter harmful pollutants for generations. Help Tree Canada. Grow clean air. Support Tree Canada by visiting us at treecanada.ca. Trees do their part. Let's do ours.
The best in traditional folk music here in St. John's. This is 93.5 FM Mun Radio CHMR.
Loretta Cormier toured extensively throughout Canada with country singer Reg Watkins for 6 years in the 1980s. They recorded three albums together and traveled to Nashville and recorded singles there. Next, Loretta tells how she met Reg and how he helped her follow that dream.
I met Reg, again, I was about 12 years old, and my girlfriend and I, Lucy Poirier, and myself, were singing, again, at, like I say, at the at talent shows and stuff, and we went and did a show in Stephenville with the group, the dancers from the Valley and the Fiddlers and stuff. We were part of a group that went to the Arts and Culture Center in Stephenville to do a show. There was an editor of a newspaper there at the time, Peter Harrington was his name, I believe, and he heard Lucy and I sing. And at the same time, he was booking Ron McMunn and the Silver Fox Tour, I think it was called, through Newfoundland, with Reg Watkins as special guest. So he was booking this group, country group, through Newfoundland with Reg, and he thought we'd be a great addition to this. So, because they were doing things like Stephenville Days, outdoor family shows, in school gymnasiums, I remember playing at the school out in Cape St. George, Gander Days Festival. So it was all family-oriented stuff that they were doing. So he thought we'd be a great addition to that. And that's how the introduction to Reg came. And we did that for the summer. Reg and I just kept in touch over the years.
Now, this other girl, just to back up, you were singing with at the Arts and Culture Center in Stephenville, I think you said. Did you sing much with her as a duo?
I think we used to do a couple of duets together when we do the talent shows. So
did you
I guess,
use a name?
I think it was Peter Harrington, that the editor of the newspaper, that put that name on us, the Codger Valley Sweethearts.
The Codger Valley, that's what I was leading
yeah,
up to.
Yeah, yeah.
Wondering no, how they fit into this.
Yeah, it wasn't something that I guess
you
they needed.
You weren't performing under that.
No. It was just something that he labeled us with when we did the tour with the group and Reg at the time. But it wasn't something that we were singing under, you know. But I do remember doing, I guess, how it all came about was because we did do a couple of duets together.
You were still in your early teens, probably, when you met Reg. It sounds like our mid-teens.
Oh, I was, I was maybe 14,
and
I'd say, at the time.
How old would he have been?
Reg was 27 years older
yes.
than I was, so yes. He was 40-ish, I guess, at the time,
But you stayed in communication.
Yes, through my high school years, he'd write letters, and I'd write letters back to him, and it was like a pen pal relationship, you know?
Yeah.
It was really neat,
No emails then.
no emails back then, that's for sure.
Okay, so time passed. Did you see him or perform with him?
That's, that's during those years I played with the Islanders for a couple of years, and then I went to university in Corner Brook, and it was after my first year in university in Corner Brook that he called up one day, and he said he was coming through Newfoundland, so he'd like to stop and see me, and so he visited me at my parents' house in the valley, and he said, "This is the idea I have," and I mean, I had my suitcases packed and ready to go back. I was doing summer session at university. I'd won a scholarship, and I mean, everything was all looked after. I mean, I had my plans laid out. And he came by, spent the night at my mom's house, and said, like, "This is I'd love it if you know maybe we could join up as a duo and perform, and go on the road." Anyway, I guess it was my dream, because when he got up the next morning, I said, "Yep, Reg, I think I'm going to do it." I already called the university and told him I wasn't coming back.
What were you studying at the university?
I was going to be a primary school teacher.
Okay.
A little bit far removed from singing, but...
Wasn't it? So you didn't mind dropping that. So now, okay, let's get back to that. That was quite an event. How old would you have been at the time?
I was 19.
When was this?
I was 19 at the time. You know, I've said to my mom recently, I said, "How did you let me, like, you must have trusted me so much," or, you know, like, my daughter Mallory is 20 right now, and if I thought for her to go off somewhere now, I mean, I'd be petrified. I don't know if I could handle her leaving and going off on the road with somebody I hardly, you know, even though we were in touch over the years, Reg and I, still, he wasn't, you know, he was a bit of a stranger to the family. But, I mean, they always said, you know, you have a dream, you should follow it. And yeah,
it's
I did. I'm sure it was. They never ever said it was, but they stood by my decision and let me go. They knew, they knew that was my dream as well. And for the opportunity to just drop in my lap, you know, I had to take it. I couldn't see, there was no other option for me at that point.
They ask me how I met Loretta. They ask her how she met me. Our music brought us together, and there's no place that I'd rather be.
I tell them I met him out there on the road, on tour with the Silver Fox Band. We're different, but we got it together, and there's just two of us in the band.
Like Kenny and Dolly or Willie and Jones, we sing the old songs with the new. On Sunday we tune in to Bill's Country Show. My friends, this one's for you. Turning miles into smiles out there on the road, to our friends we'll always be true. From Maine to Tuktoyaktuk, St. John's to BC, you said it, this one's for you.
Of music, and I say it's all in the beat. We love to meet happy people and get them out on their dancing feet.
Some say that they've never heard us before, but we really like what you do. We tell them to keep tuning their radios, 'cause one day we'll have a song up there too.
Like Kenny and Dolly or Willie and Jones, we sing the old songs with the new. On Sunday we tune in to Bill's Country Show. My friends, this one's for you. 30 miles into smiles out there on the road, to our friends we'll always be true. From Maine to Tuktoyaktuk, St. John's to BC, you said it, this one's for you. You said it, this one's for you. You said it, this one's for you.
The dream. When you, what was going through your mind when you made a pretty quick decision to
I did.
Have a career?
Yeah,
change.
I did.
There
and actually,
must have been something that you really wanted and had thought about.
Yeah, yeah. And I think through my correspondence with Reg over the years too, I think that maybe he might have alluded to that. You know, that someday we'll sing together. You know,
yes.
I'm sure that, you know, if I go back over the letters, because I've kept all the letters, and if I go back, I'm sure I can find, you know, places where he, I'm sure that was in my future. But the first place he booked us at was a club in Daniels Harbor, burnt down. God, some lot of clubs in Newfoundland have burnt down over the years.
Yes.
But anyway, this was a little place called the Tammy Lynn Motel. And that was the first gig that we had. And it was, you know, just your typical bar with a few guys in the back playing pool. And I mean, we were up and down the Northern Peninsula a lot. That was, and the North Shore, Quebec, and that area. We played in those areas a lot over the years.
What year would it have been that you...
1980, I think it was.
It was 1980.
I think it was 1980, yeah. But from there, very quickly, from there we went to Toronto because Reg had already been in discussions with Newfoundland Caravan show that was held in Toronto. It's different countries from all over the world have different pavilions showcasing their cultures, and Newfoundland's so different that of course it was considered its own pavilion, its own country really. So they had hired Reg tentatively to put on a show, and Figgy Duff has played it over the years. Lots of Newfoundland groups have played it over the years, actually. And we did it twice, but this was... Reg knew he had this in the works when I joined him. We were asked to headline the show. There were two different... There was an upstairs show, and there was a downstairs show. So we were invited to do the main stage, so we had to find a couple of musicians, too, as well, to join us. So Reg hired Fabian James and Jim Lamb. Great musicians.
Yes.
Pranksters, but great musicians. So that was a taste of, you know, something big and, you know.
What was the name of that event again?
It was Caravan. It was called Caravan. And our show was in the Newfoundland Pavilion of Caravan.
Yes.
There were all different pavilions representing different countries.
Yes.
So
how did that go?
No, it went very well. And we were actually invited back again a couple years later, and we did the downstairs show. Figgy Duff was doing the upstairs show that year.
Yes.
So, and that time we brought my brother Gordon with us, and the three of us did it together.
Right.
So.
And we haven't mentioned, but now Reg was already an established performer
Oh,
by
yes.
this time.
Yeah.
He had a recording career, and he'd been performing for many years.
And lots of chart action with his songs as well,
And he must have had contacts in the music
industry. Yeah, and that's how he got that show, I'm sure, you know, because he'd already made lots of contacts.
And he was a songwriter as well as a singer and a musician.
Yes.
And dancer.
Yes.
Storyteller.
Yes, he was the whole gamut, yeah.
All of that. So you were getting involved with someone with experience in the industry.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're in 1980, and things started to happen that year pretty fast, didn't
they? Well, yeah, it did, because one of the first things we did that year was go to Calgary to visit Gary Buck, who was a friend of Reg's as well, and Gary had a successful career musically as well. He'd been charted on Billboard as well, and he also did some producing, so... we went to his studio in Calgary. Smooth Rock Studios is what it was called. I don't know if he owned it, but he was affiliated with it. He produced our first single, and that was Down on My Knees and Nothing in the Can, I think, with it, Reg. Yeah, that was the two singles.
That on that song.
And actually, the Down on My Knees song was one that Gary pitched to us, and it was written by Whispering Bill Anderson in the States. So... And it's never been recorded by anybody else, but that was my first recording.
And later it was on your album.
Yes.
Probably Solid Gold Mountain.
Yes, it was, yeah. Yeah.
So was that a re-recording for the album, or was it the same?
It was the same recording, yeah. We did the single first.
Yes.
And we did just the two songs there as a single, and we tested the waters with that. And then from there we went... to Ottawa. Ottawa with the Prescott Brothers, we did some recording with them, and John Arpin was a fabulous piano player as well. And he did some sessions with us as well. So that first album was done, I believe, some in Calgary and some in Ontario.
So those recording sessions you were just referring to with John Arpin and so on,
yes,
they would have ended up on the album.
Yes,
they?
Oh yeah.
Songs from that.
The songs from those sessions were all on
now, that's on the Lone Raven label. What can you tell me about the Lone Raven label? It wasn't a major label.
It was our own label. We set up our own record label and our own publishing company at the time.
I don't know if Reg had that going before because he released...
No,
okay, there were other labels.
It was our own, we set up at the time.
And a later album was done on that as well.
Yeah.
And the singles, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of them, anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
You released the single, the first single, Down
on My Knees. Yeah.
And was there much reaction to that, or do you remember at the time? Were you pleased with it? How did it go?
Very much, especially locally. Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. Really played it a lot, especially CFCB in Cornerbrook played it a lot. And right across the province, reading not so much in St. John's, but Grand Falls, Gander, Cornerbrook, Stephenville, they played the record a lot.
You say you should follow wherever you lead her, to Boston, to Dallas, or I'm
You're listening to a special edition of Newfound Records as we present part one of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story. After the break, with their compass malfunctioning, Reg and Loretta's small boat drifts aimlessly in the pea soup fog of the Gulf of St. Lawrence.
Do you love the music of Newfoundland and Labrador? Join host Kevin Kelly every Saturday from 10 a.m. till noon on 93.5 CHMR FM for Upon This Rock, 2 hours of the best in local music.
I am leaving on the evening tide.
From alternative to traditional, this radio show highlights the rich, diverse talent found in our own backyard. Upon This Rock, Saturdays, 10 a.m. till noon, and only on 93.5 CHMR FM. And also available on the World Wide Web via MP3 stream or Real Audio at www.mun.ca/CHMR.
Are you tired of seeing plastic bags hanging from trees and blowing around your neighborhood? We throw away millions of plastic bags every year. They end up in rivers and oceans where they kill marine life. You can make a big difference by bringing reusable bags whenever you go shopping. Keep your bags in your car or by the door so that you remember every time. To support the Bring Your Own Bag campaign, come find us on Facebook. Brought to you by the East Coast Trail Association, Sierra Club of Canada, NLEN, Northeast Avalon ACAP, and CPOS NL.
This is CJMR FM, 93.5.
You're listening to a Newfound Records radio special coming to you from the campus of Memorial University in St. John's, Newfoundland. We now continue with part one of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story. Next, Loretta talks about the making of our first album with Reg, Solid Gold Mountain.
Okay, back to Solid Gold Mountain and the recording of that album. What kind of an experience was that? How, you said the part of it was probably done in Ottawa, and I think you said another part in Calgary, so there was a number of sessions must have gone on over a period of time.
Yeah.
This was new to you.
It was. Well, I mean, we had to, and back then you had, you know, we had enough money to do the single, and then we had to go make more money so we could do it. I mean, it was all,
so
you know,
you
pay as you go, pretty much, you know,
yeah,
so that's probably why
label,
it took a while to get that one done, yeah.
Banks aren't particularly
with their money. Not with musicians.
No.
And, yeah. And I know, I remember back then in the 80s, the interest rate was like 21%. So
it
was pretty high back then. But yeah, so no, you had we had to, you know, work and make enough money to go and finish
so
the session. That's why
it sounds like you were raising money through your performances.
Oh, yes, yeah. And we had some good, you know, at the time, lucrative gigs. We played the Fort Nelson Hotel like for 6 weeks at a time and in the lounge there, and it was hard work though. I mean, it was 5 hours a night with a matinee on the weekend, and but you needed your Sunday off for sure because you couldn't talk by Sunday.
Where's Fort Nelson?
Fort Nelson, BC, northern BC. And again, that was through Reg's contacts before I joined him. He had a friend there that owned the hotel, Bob Keane, and so he booked us in like maybe 3 times a year for 6 weeks. So when you get your little circuit going, it was pretty good.
Well, it amazes me. It sounds like you had a rigorous tour schedule for a few years, perhaps.
Yeah, we did. We go out west for maybe 4 or 5 months, and we come back to Newfoundland, and we go places where they hadn't had bands, you know, before, up the northern coast of Labrador or Lower North Shore, Quebec.
Tell me more about that.
Okay, well, I mean, some memorable experiences for me are the Lower North Shore, Quebec, Le Tabatier, Chevry, Harrington Island. We went by boat. We took the Mingan from Blanc-Sablon, and we went as far as St. Augustine, which is, again, Reg had contacts through there because of the song he wrote, St. Augustine, and that's one of his biggest charted songs, actually,
yes.
That and the Badger Moose. I remember being dropped off, like, outside in the boats, because the water was so shallow, the boats would come out and pick up people on the ferry to get them into the shore. But we did shows in there. Harrington Island was just beautiful, all boardwalk throughout the whole island, and Chevry. I remember getting lost in the fog, though. We had, I think his name was Raymond Buffett. He was a captain of a ship up in the Beaufort Sea, and he was home on holidays, so he lived in Chevry, and we did a show in Chevry, and we had to get to Harrington Island the next day for a show. And so he offered to take us on his smaller boat with the equipment, and and it should only have been a half-hour boat ride. And we were out there for 2 hours. The fog, it was really foggy. It was like pea soup. And we were out for 2 hours and no sign of Harrington Island. So anyway, he couldn't figure out what the problem was. And finally we realized it was the magnets in our speakers had thrown the compass off. So we were out in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. But I mean, once he figured out what the problem was, we were able to get back to where we were going. But still, it was scary. a little scary at the time. And then from getting from Litabache back to St. Augustine, we went again by friends of ours, Roy and Miva Galibois, friends that we stayed with in Tibetche. I can't believe I remember all those names after 25 years, but they just pop into my head.
You're impressing me.
We stayed with them in Tibetche and played at the community hall there. And we had to get to St. Augustine for a show, and it was really windy. They had, you know, an open boat. And I remember we were almost swamped. We had to go really close to the shoreline because the waves were so high. The wind really picked up. It was probably supposed to be about a 45-minute boat ride to St. Augustine from Tibetche. And I don't know how long we took, but by the time we got there, there were people on the wharf with blankets to throw. We were soaking wet. We thought we were going to have to start throwing out our speakers to stay afloat. And I remember Reg with the buckets. I know, that would have been painful. I remember Reg with the bucket bailing out the boat because the water was just coming in as fast as, you know, he was bailing it out. So it was that was a little bit harrowing as well. But we got to the wharf, and I remember people there with blankets thrown up because we were all just frozen to death. Yeah, so there's been a few.
I don't think a song came out of that. I never heard a song about it.
Sounds
like there's one there.
Yeah, a song didn't come out of that one, no.
it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And to go through something like that, at the time, it must have been just quite an experience.
But you know, I was young and I didn't recognize the dangers. I don't know. You think when you're, you know, 20, 21 years old, you think that nothing can hurt you, I guess. I don't know. Right. But it didn't scare me.
So what kind of, it sounds like you're playing in these remote places where they weren't used to having that type of entertainment.
Exactly. A lot of places didn't have hadn't had bands in there before. Like, we were some of the pioneers. A lot of fun.
What kind of reception did you get at the performances?
Oh, they were always great. Yeah. It was wonderful. I think
did
that's
that
what
make it worthwhile?
Made it worthwhile. That's for sure. Yeah. Yeah, and we made pretty good money too. That was important at the time because, like I said, we were trying to raise money to do the next album, or you know.
Got the wind in our sails, like sweet music from above. Can almost hear the Vikings sing. Of land, sea, and love. Rising early in the morning, gonna follow that dream. Our music ship is loaded down and bound for Augustine. St. Augustine, St. Augustine, hold out your friendly hand. Our music ship is sailing toward your friendly sand. All you city slickers, come aboard while you can. Come join us on our music cheer round the coast of Newfoundland. We'll rail her in the morning from Blassavado, Fort Bay. Come one and all you from St. Paul, make this your happy day. Yes, our music ship is sailing to where the salmon rivers flow. We've come to dance and sing for you and carry off your gold. St. Augustine, St. Augustine, hold out your friendly hand. Our music ship is sailing toward your friendly sand.
Just tell me a bit about your show, how did it go? Because he was a singer in his own right, and
because
you often sang by yourself, and sometimes you sang
together. We threw it back and forth. Reg played guitar and sang, and he tap danced, and he had this little box made up that he had mic'd. He had mics underneath the inside the box, so for his tapping, which was really neat. He'd stand on the box,
Something like Stanton Town with a piece of plywood.
Sort of like that idea. Oh. And then I had a couple of different things over the years. I had something called a gig rig, and that provided, I played guitar, but I also operated the beat, and it gave us, it gave us a rhythm section, pretty much.
Was that sort of technology in its infancy in those days?
Yeah, for sure, because it wasn't always reliable. And then I think before that, we had something. There was a gig rig. There was a gig rig. I forget what the other one. An orchestrator. The orchestrator was the last one we had. The first thing we had was called a gig rig, and that was back in the day of 8-tracks. And the 8-tracks had just that you could hit the buttons and hit different chords. It was just like a rhythm section. And you put the 8-track in for certain rhythms, but you play the different chords with your feet. Uh-huh. So I did that as well as play guitar and sing.
Right.
So that gave us our background, a bit of our background, so that we could play bigger halls, bigger clubs. Well,
yes, with just the two of you.
With just the two of us,
and
we had
And how did that all work?
Well, it worked. It worked. We got invited back, so I guess it was okay. It wasn't my dream through those years was to play with a band. Like I always wondered, my gosh, it must be so nice just to play with a nice professional band behind me. That was always a dream.
That's the best, isn't it?
That's the best. The real instruments are the best. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah. This was just something we did to make it work.
Yes.
At the time, you know.
Yes.
And we relied, you know, it was more about our singing and you know, Reg and his tap dancing and Reg and his stories and stuff like that. That's what our show was about more.
Okay, tell me more about that now. Reg and his stories and his tap dancing and so on.
Well, you know, like I was a shy. It took me a while to come out of my little, you know, cocoon, because Reg was the talkative one on stage, and I just handled all the electronics and, you know, and I sang, but I didn't do a lot of talking back and forth, to be honest. He was sort of the host of the whole thing, yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, his stories, you know, he always got people in stitches. That was just the way he was. He was a great storyteller. You know, and a lot of the songs, we did a lot of the original songs we did, you know, especially as we started recording too. We always performed a lot of those songs, as well as, again, country and some Newfoundland stuff as well. We always had a combination of different kinds of music.
The stories that Ridge would tell, were they original, or were they stories that he'd gotten from elsewhere? Or
well, I'd say it was a combination. For example, George's golf game. I mean, that was he used to do that maybe on a break or whatever, you know. That was hilarious. That really got people, you know.
Tell me more about his step dancing.
Yeah, well, he should have been a stand up in Las Vegas. That's the type of singer Reg was, and tap dancer, and the whole, you know, he had the whole package. I always thought he did anyway. But he just, we'd be singing a song, and if the beat moved him, he'd just go into a tap dance on stage, you know, or he'd finish off a song with a tap dance. For example, he used to sing the Chattanooga Shoeshine Boy, you know, and he'd sing, and then he'd break into a dance, and he'd sing some more, and he'd break into a dance.
And what was he like at it?
Good. Yes. Very light on his feet.
Yes.
Very light on his feet, yeah. But he had a... I was going to say, I think it was in 85, he had an accident, a car accident, and he ended up getting steel plates put in his knee, and that ended his tap dancing.
Yes.
That was probably the beginning of the end of his his music career.
Yes, too bad. Maybe we'll get to that again later
on.
Wasn't that a bit unusual? I don't know of many entertainers that would break into a tap.
It was different.
Step down, whatever it is, I don't know the difference.
Reg was always a believer in doing something out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. For example, the Newfoundland mummer, he had these stilts that he wore that made him like 8 feet tall. And he had a lady in the Cadre Valley make him a cape and a uniform, and the map of Newfoundland was embroidered in the back of the cape with all the communities embroidered in there as well. It was amazing. If we went to a community, for example, if we went to Flowers Cove and we were going to do a show at the Lions Club, and we just come in on a day's notice and nobody knew we were coming, we'd put posters out, but Reg would dress up in his mummer's outfit and walk up and down the town, and by the end of the day, everybody in town knew that we were Reg and Loretta were here to perform, and we'd get a crowd. It was amazing. He always thought outside the box.
Yes, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Sort of like a way of... There was no Twitter back then.
No, no, that's right. No tweeting and no emails. And no.
So you do something like that, yeah, to let people know.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Didn't he incorporate that Mummer's Act then into the stage shows?
Oh, well, yes. Yes, he did. Yes, he would. What would happen is we'd take a break, and then he would go and dress up in his mummer's costume, and then he'd come out, and he'd dance with some of the women in the club. And so he made it a part of the show as well.
It's been interesting. Yeah. If he was 8 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah.
What were you doing while this was going on?
I think I played. Yeah, I did. I would play like an old-fashioned waltz or something like that, and he would get someone out to dance.
Oh, yes, some questions I had on the Solid Gold Mountain album. You are credited on that one as having co-written Tears Fell on the Fiddle.
Yes.
Tell me about that song.
That song was written about, well, the Cottero Valley, and I guess just being homesick, you know, tears are falling on the fiddle tonight. And,
right,
and Uncle Johnny Archie McDonald is a fiddle player in the Cottero Valley, and that's the fiddler that we're alluding to in the... in the song. Basically just, you know, how I long for my valley so green, where the river flows down to the sea, where the sun's going to shine from a mountain above on my true love and me. It was just about, you know, being homesick. I mean, I hadn't been away that much, and even though we got back a fair bit, but still, the draw of home was always strong for me.
So I gather from what you're saying that, like, when they say a song is co-written, I think Reg's name and your name are on the song, probably.
Yeah.
Sounds like you had a big part in the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
And what about the music?
I think the music was more Reg.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and as far as I can, I guess that would have been your first song that you recorded that you had a co-writing credit.
Any writing? Oh, okay, I didn't realize that.
In search of fame, and I found my way tonight.
performing, your recording career was getting going. Were you getting any radio, television interviews or appearances on radio and TV shows, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we usually most of the towns we went through, we always visited the radio stations and they played our stuff, our songs at the time. TV, we did the Eddie Eastman show one year
in
St. John's here. And we did like the Happy Tree in Gander, that would have been, I think that might have been televised at the time, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't do a lot of TV. Opry North was the one that he did, I think, back in the 70s.
Was that radio or TV?
That was out of Ontario. That was radio.
Well, you weren't involved with that Opry North, because I had a note about Opry North. And
yeah.
Thought maybe you were involved.
Trying to remember. I think we went back years later, Reg and I together, and did a song on the Opry North show when it was held I think they used to move the show around in different areas, and I think that was like in Cambridge that year, I think, yeah. And we just did a song on the stage that day.
Now, the album, is there any particular song on it that stands out? I think the list of songs are there, mm-hmm. as being your favorite, or anything that you could say about them that would make you of interest?
Well,
Dogwood.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but because you look back over your stuff, and the early stuff, to me, you always think that you're a lot better today than you were back then.
Yes.
Love at 11 Years Old was a song that I sang since I was a kid. I sang at all the talent shows, and it's actually, I think it was recorded by a girl in the States, and I think it was a country song, even though it's got that bit of a folky sound
right.
to it. I like the Yukon Waltz. I really like the feel of that song when Reg
right.
sings it. And Valentine's Day Disaster, I mean, that was always a special song to me.
Did you perform those songs live in your show?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we did.
And what kind of reaction was there to the album? How did it go? Did you...
Well, we sold, I'd say, close to 10,000 copies
yes.
over the years. Yeah.
Right.
Good response to it.
Yes.
Yeah. People always told us that this was our best one, so I don't know. But I think when a band starts out and they put out the first one and people buy it and they like it, I don't know if anything ever measures up.
I guess if you had to describe the genre of the music on that album,
yeah.
what would it be?
It's certainly, I don't know, it's not Celtic, I'll tell you that.
No,
it's more of maybe folk, mm-hmm. you know, with a little touch of country.
Country,
you
know? Yeah.
Yeah, country folk.
I fell in love at 11 years old with the nicest boy in school. Though tongue-tied and bashful, I hope he loved me too. Every day after school, I'd go stand by his gate, cheerfully braving the cold, hoping to catch just one glimpse of the God that I love. Handed my heart to him. This was his greatest surprise.
You've been listening to part one of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story, a special presentation of the Newfound Records radio show on CHMR 93.5 FM. The songs you heard were sung by Loretta Cormier and by Reg Watkins. For more information on those songs, drop by the program's website, newfoundrecords.ca. This show was researched, produced, edited, and hosted by me, Wayne Tucker. Send me an email. It's wayne@newfoundrecords.ca. And special thanks to Loretta Cormier Johnson for her interview, which was done in June of 2010. Find out more about Loretta and the Cormiers on the internet at thecormiers.ca. And be sure to tune in at 2 p.m. next Monday for part two, when Loretta follows her dream to Nashville and tells of being trapped upside down in a crashed plane in Canada's northern wilderness.
An upside down 172 Cessna. Yeah, I was in that. I was in that. That's how we landed. And they had to take that plane out in pieces afterwards.
Until next time, as always, be kind to Mother Earth and her children. Bye-bye.